something that we've been working on at the City of Melbourne through our Smart City Incubator, and trialing this basically like quite radical honesty about what's going on with the technology we use and the data that we collect, because none of the data that we collect is personally identifiable information. So technically, the law would say that there's no need to inform or build awareness with the community. But I think the more and more decisions that we make and the more that we digitally enable and digitally transform our cities, the more we should be talking about it, even if it doesn't break the law collecting that data, because that's our job as government, to be really transparent and accountable for how we run the city.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a brilliant conversation with Tegan Kopp, an applied innovation expert and the lead for the Smart City Incubator at the City of Melbourne. Tegan and I discuss their background and how they landed in the smart community space. They then tell us about some of their favourite projects working at the City of Melbourne Smart City office, including behind-the-scenes nerdy stuff like managing data across the life cycle. We talk about how the City of Melbourne is being transparent and accountable in the data they collect, and inviting people into the conversation to build data and digital literacy for the community, as well as the global trends of mistrust towards both government and tech companies. Tegan and I explore the opportunity for scaling local government tasks through sharing data and practice, as well as the ways our personal digital footprints could be better used if we had control or access. We finish our chat discussing the vital importance of digital inclusion and accessibility, including a great example of how the City of Melbourne approached digital exclusion and isolation during the lockdowns. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Tegan. How are you today?
I'm good, Zoe. How are you doing?
I am doing fabulous. It's so great to see you. I think the listeners are missing out because we both have amazing rainbow hair today.
Yeah. Podcast format is rude to the listeners right now.
Yeah. So, yes, go and have a look on social media because we'll have a screenshot. That took us far too long to take because I was being silly. But anyway, okay, enough about me and rainbow hair. I'm very impressed by yours, by the way. I think it's interesting. People listening are kind of going to go, how is it working? Both of our hair is so different.
So different.
But themed.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I love it. Anyway, okay, over to you. Tell us about your background and what you're passionate about.
Thanks, Zoe. First, I just wanted to acknowledge that I'm on Wurundjeri country today in the land of the Kulin Nation. And I want to pay my respects to elders past and present. I grew up on Yorta Yorta country, which is flat floodplain country. And I feel so honoured to live in a place like the one that we do have so many variations of landscape, and to be supporting what the future of Melbourne is and contributing to the future of Australia and working in partnership with First Nations communities. So I always like to start with that because I think that's our history, right?
That's it. No, thank you. Thank you for starting that.
Awesome. Who am I? What is the meaning of life? I can't answer the second one, but I can have a go at the first. My name's Tegan. My pronouns are they, them. I have always had a passion for creating meaning outside of myself, and working in government is definitely one way that you can do that. Before I joined City of Melbourne, I hadn't ever worked in government before. I worked in not-for-profit space, mostly in digital inclusion, working on national projects with Australia Post, Telstra, and Google as well, which was fun. And then found myself thinking, what would it be like to do something else? And was very fortunate to run into my old boss when I was at a loss for the next step. And she was like, hey, we're doing this thing called the Smart City Office at City of Melbourne. What do you reckon? I was like, sounds good, I'm in. And that was a 3-month contract 6 years ago, and I'm still in the space.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Was that Bonnie Shaw?
Yeah, Bonnie Shaw, the legend, the myth, the legend.
I talked to her the other day, and we talked about you and the awesome things that you and the team are doing. So, yes, awesome. Well, okay, so that's a bit about you, what you're passionate about, and, yeah, how you landed in this space. That was 6 years ago, I think you said there. So we'll go broad because I know you're doing so many amazing projects and have done, so we can kind of step through those. But we'll go broad first. What is a smart community to you?
Well, a smart community is one that puts people and the environment and the planet and animals at the center of it. That's really my biggest belief. And I think that, you know, that's well evidenced in the work that the City of Melbourne does. And I think sometimes that's missing from conversations, depending on what little nook or cranny you're in the smart cities or smart community space. It's all about making more intuitive, livable places and setting people up for success now, but also how can we keep doing that into the future as well?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, tech and data are enablers, but there's so many other enablers as well, as we know. But if you don't start with the people, then you won't get the outcome, right? Because, yeah, and I think that's really true in the approach that you've taken and the City of Melbourne have taken as well. Seeing some of your work is very people-centric and not just in words and say we're doing humans and, you know, they're at the center and all those type of things, but just in the way that you've gone about that as well. So let's dive into it. Tell us about your favorite projects. You can start wherever, you can finish wherever.
I think it feels like everything's kind of a continuation of something else, right? So when I joined the Smart City office, it was Bonnie Shaw and Michelle Fitzgerald leading the charge and really sponsoring this kind of data-driven approach. And I can see now through their hard work and, you know, the hard work of others, we have this amazing enabling function in the City of Melbourne now where it's not just about smart city versus another data type. It's like it's all data that can help us make better decisions. So how do we do that? How do we do that for ourselves, but also enable our colleagues in the community and the council to do that as well? One of my favorite projects that we've been working on is actually like behind the scenes nerdy kind of stuff.
Yes. Love it.
And it's really about exploring how do we set ourselves up if we want data to be an asset, what are all the steps that we need to take to make sure that, you know, we are managing across the life cycle? How do we make sure that everyone has the knowledge to understand the data or use the data or apply the data? How do we build awareness for people who won't use it but want to know? How do we make sure, you know, we quality control, we manage security, both physical and digital, we think about privacy, we think about like cold store and cataloging and doing, you know, in our systems, doing the heavy lifting so that at the end of the day, all of that effort is enabling to have great data-driven products that help our community. And everyone just thinks of a dashboard, but I think it could be anything. It could be a text message. It could be an email. It could be an automated phone call. It could be a poster and someone gets an alert, you know, once every 2 hours and they go out of the room and they whiteboard something off and they, you know, they wipe it off and they put the next number on. Like, you know, like it's data-driven doesn't have to mean digital only. And I think I'm really excited about working across that whole life cycle of how we, you know, use technology, collect data to make a change or to inform people, enable them to make a change and measure impact. And there's, yeah, lots of behind the scenes nerdy stuff going on there, which is one of my favorite projects. I think, you know, if you think about data as an asset being a life cycle that you need to understand and manage, then the awareness and understanding piece in and of itself is really important. It's something that we've been working on at the City of Melbourne through our Smart City incubator and trialing this basically like quite radical honesty about what's going on with the technology we use and the data that we collect. Because none of the data that we collect is any, you know, identifiable, personally identifiable information. So technically, the law would say that there's no need to inform or build awareness with the community. But I think the more and more decisions that we make and the more that we digitally enable and digitally transform our cities, the more we should be talking about it, even if it doesn't break the law collecting that data, because that's our job as government, to be really transparent and accountable for how we run the city. And, you know, also changes in the Local Government Act recently have really made it clear that we do need to be more transparent and engaging in our operation of government, and put out more invitations to the community to be involved in activity like committee meetings, talking about big issues that affect them. How do we do that? So I think this is just the one of the ways that we can do that. So, you know, we talk about from everything from specifically what sensors we're using, giving direct, you know, direct connections to the websites of the vendors that we use, through to, you know, these is all the types of data that we collect. We put stickers out in the urban realm every time we have a sensor or nearby the sensor to let people know, tell them what's going on. There's a phone number you can call if you want to talk about it. You can email us. We'll meet you in person. You know, we're really working hard to make it really easy to access and understand and fill in the gaps for people, because I think, you know, my observation is when there are gaps, especially around things like use of technology and data collection, people will fill in that gap with whatever personal experience they have, or, you know, other experiences of other cities.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think, yeah, the work you're doing there is also, so it's obviously about being transparent and, you know, which then leads to building trust and that type of thing. But also it's helping lift the data and digital literacy of the community, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, some of the mega trends that we're kind of experiencing that make this even more important is just, you know, like across the board, depending on where you are, there is a general mistrust of government globally. There's a mistrust of technology companies that we can see playing out. You know, some recent Australian examples include like the Medibank and Optus data breaches, as well as facial recognition in Kmart and Bunnings, you know, so this is kind of in, this is not just nerdy news anymore, right? Like, this is mainstream. And I think, again, with the pandemic, I won't say the C word, we all became epidemiologists, right? Like, data-driven reporting was just, all of a sudden, everyone can read a bar graph. Everyone knows an XY coordinates, you know? So we've got this data literacy and also now, like, a data hunger. And so the time is right to be, to sharing that and to building a shared and common understanding of data-driven decision making, but to lift up the literacy, but also to have more peer-to-peer conversations about what that future of data use and data collection looks like.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree. And then I also think, like, building the data and digital literacy of the community, but also within, like, our organisations, right? Because not everyone, but a lot of people are using data every day. We're not thinking about that. But then it's just like lifting that again to kind of go, well, what insights could we get if we had this data available? Or, oh, wow, it would be really great if we had that. What, you know, what could that do? Or even just then starting to discover things when you link that with that, then, you know, those insights that you can get. But without, like, us thinking from that data kind of lens, and not everyone needs to do that, but having that data lens, then you can start cross-pollinating across different silos in councils and things as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I kind of noticed that, or maybe it's just happening at the same time and it's a convergence thing, but the rise of digital twin as this concept that local governments and other urban realm operators are talking about, and really is data-driven. And so someone smart told me this. I think it was Gavin Cotterill. I think he's the one who kind of introduced this concept to me, that digital twin, you know, digital twin is just a capability, right? It's just an enabler. And the functions that you have are find, visualize, analyze, simulate, and predict. But you can't do that if you don't have your data digitized. And so I think that that's a push to bring up data maturity across lots of different practitioners, because a lot of that data is available. It just hasn't been digitized and centralized in one place. So the first step is to digitize it. The second thing to do is to make it accessible so that it could feed into even just a basic digital twin capability of going through and sorting through lots of disparate data sets that weren't previously all put together in one place to make new meaning, even just as a human without doing the visualize or insights piece. Yeah.
I totally agree. I think we can use it as a catalyst. Like, it's just again, we know it's a buzzword at the moment, but using that as a catalyst for all those things that you talked about, and then also managing assets further down the track as well.
Exactly.
Not even further down, like hopefully very soon, and people are doing it already, but we know that, yeah, using it as a catalyst rather than the end, you know, only focusing on, oh, well, we have to be able to do this everything, like at the end, because that's quite overwhelming, right? And then that's when people go, oh, it's just a gimmick, it's just a thing. But along the way, there's all these little iterations that are really powerful in themselves.
Uh-huh, totally. I think it's really exciting. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity and possibility for people who kind of work in the smart community space to come together and to share practice. And you know, I think it has the potential, digital twin capability has the potential to be a great equalizer as well. I think if you think about the tasks that we all need to do as local government entities, these are very similar tasks. Like, you know, there might be a bit of sprinkles on the top that makes it local to you, but, you know, a majority of the task is the same. If the majority of the task is the same, is there scalability in, you know, across all of those digital twin capabilities to share practice and to share platforming and to share, you know, investment and digitizing, you know, standard functions of council? I think it's a huge opportunity. And especially if we think about data as an asset that's useful to many, not just one custodian of the land, I think that adds something even more exciting into the mix. If only we could all just work together.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think like there's so much, yeah, potential, I guess, for that equalizer, like standardization, because a lot of the time, yeah, one, we're doing similar things, but also then we reinvent the wheel every time we need a new thing or like a, you know, oh, we need this technology, but like, why can't we do like what we call a smart region approach where we have, you know, everything or whatever. But the data element is a really key one, because you can also learn a lot, not with just your own data, but the you know, the council beside you or a similar demographic or population in Queensland or, you know, somewhere else or even overseas. Like if we could actually, and again, like you said earlier, not that personally, that personal identified data, right? So we're not talking about, you know, I'm not comparing with you and me, we're comparing on groups of people, so then we can learn from that as well. Because like, it's really interesting, you know, I talk to a lot of councils, you probably do too, being one yourself, but talking to councils, it's like, you know, they might have a similar population to another council, not, you know, maybe Western Australia and, I don't know, Queensland, there's two small towns, but one's doing this way, and one's doing that way, and they're getting different results, but they actually should be getting something similar because it's quite similar, or obviously all the nuances in there as well. But there's so much that we can learn just with that kind of data. And at the end of the day, it's about using our resources more effectively and more efficiently, right? And increasing quality of life for people, animals, and the planet. So when you start thinking about like that, yeah, we can then use these, like, you know, that's why we can use like digital twin, for example. People might be like, oh, yep, that's just a, you know, a passing trend, but if you actually then go to the substance, you can see all those iterations like you were talking about earlier, and then we can really latch on to the hype right now, and we'll still be latched on once the hype goes, but we'll be then on that substance level. Because I think the same thing happened with the term smart city, right? And like that whole concept, whereas we knew that there was substance underneath, and now we've found it, and now we're really like, you know, honing in and grabbing onto it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like, imagine if we could all get together, like what is the thing of great national importance? Is it about, Is it something to do with climate change? Is it something to do with waste? Is it something to do with carbon footprint reduction? Like, what is the great issue that unites us all as urban? I think that's the thing, because otherwise the nuance is so varied. But I think surely there should be something. Even if it was just, you know, digitizing the recycling stream. That's a massive issue across Australia where we can't offshore our recycling anymore. So what can we do? We have a lot of smart people in Australia. I'm sure we can put our heads together.
Absolutely. I know. And like, there's so many, I guess, things happening, you know, with circular economy and that type of thing, but you need the smart city approach, because
it's a systems thinking approach.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise, you know, it'll work really well in a pocket or, you know, in one kind of area or for a pilot, but we won't be able to scale it to what we actually need to make real impact.
Yeah. An interesting thing that I'm thinking about as well is, like, you know, expanding what it means, which I'm starting to see now, or maybe it's just like confirmation bias happening. But this convergence, there's been such a separation between, okay, this is IoT data and this is structured data and this is spatial data and this is longitudinal qualitative data. And we haven't really been thinking of them all as something that is an enabler, and it's just data. And so I think, like, what else can be data? Someone really smart at the IoT conference last year, an international speaker, I can't remember, Michelle invited. She was so smart. We'll find out. We'll put it in the notes, Zoe. She talked about the idea that, like, everything's a sensor. Like, your phone is a sensor. All of your apps are sensors. Like, you as every individual has this amazing wealth of data. And I heard another really smart person from the RMIT, which is a university in Melbourne, RMIT Blockchain Innovation Hub, talk about this concept of decentralized autonomous organizations. And again, another link, because I'm terrible at names. But he kind of talked about this concept of, imagine if you could get together with your neighbors as a decentralized autonomous organization and decide which parts of your digital data footprint that you were going to share with council to help them service you better. So, like, I think that, you know, these are exciting things too, right? Because I think, again, digital twin is just a channel we can digitize. How can we leverage this data to kind of create this more intuitive, resilient, sustainable, livable city, or, you know, country, state, world, planet? And I think that, like, that's exciting too, thinking about where could the new data come from? And I think that, you know, we all have this powerful digital footprint, which so far we haven't been able to take hold of and leverage as individuals to share with decision makers. It's all been mediated through the companies that control the marketplace.
Mm, absolutely. It's like taking control of our digital footprint, which I think is and our data, and also realizing that it's a value exchange. Like, I will put my data into a website or a service or whatever because I get some kind of value from that. So what is that value? What is it worth to me? It's not necessarily monetary terms, but who knows what that will look like in the future. But yeah, particularly for, like, and also how inconvenient it is for me to have to put the same data into so many different things, which may be inconvenient to me as a, you know, person who is digitally literate and, you know, whatever, doing fine. But actually, that can really be a barrier for a lot of people, you know, like English second language, all those type of things as well. And I just think, yeah, sometimes I think about the things that inconvenience me and I could just write them off as, oh, Zoe, just get over it. But when you then think about it from, like, you know, a different perspective, so many, yeah, and the information that you should and, like, what you ought to be sharing and what, like, the need to know basis from the other side. So really taking that user, like, what do I need to share to get that service? No, you don't need to know all of the other things that, you know, may just be standard practice because that's just how we always did it. And I think that's really important too, because then we take control of our data as well.
Yeah, 100%, Zoe. And you're reminding me, because I always just get excited by these new topics that I find out about, and I'm just like, wow, yes, we really need to think about that. That person's so smart. I've never thought about it before. But the flip side of that is thinking about those inclusion outcomes and how can you make services and create opportunities for everyone. And that's why it is so important to, you know, never be fully digital, because until, I guess, the internet is free and devices are free, you need to have an offline or in-person option, and it needs to be accessible. You can't just assume everyone has power to charge their device, a device in the first place, money to access the internet, and that, you know, the knowledge and ability to then use it to their full advantage to create better outcomes in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, internet connectivity should be a human right. Well, it is, I would say it should, yeah, it is a human right.
I think they have made it a human right. I think there was a movement in the UN to make it a human right.
And particularly during the C word, that became really apparent. And it really, I started thinking about it, like, you know, getting my grandma on Zoom and things like that, spending 4 hours on the phone with her, trying to work out why she had 3 Facebook accounts or whatever. Was she being hacked or not? But those type of things, lifting that digital issue, but also she wants to be on all the devices. She's got the tablet, the phone, the whatever, but lifting that literally to keep her safe as well, you know, from all those other things. But thinking about, like, if the only way that we were getting information is through digital means, then so many people are left behind. And like you said, like, being able to consume that and then make use of that information as well to, you know, make the best choice for themselves at that time. Or I think that's really important, because, you know, you might just go, oh, well, it was there on the, you know, I don't know, wherever it was. But if, yeah, it's about the timing as well. Like, you know, like, I shouldn't get it first just because I can access it online or whatever. I don't know how we solve that. But, like, there's those type of things to think about as well.
Totally. And I really like that digital inclusion is much more a part of the smart communities discussion now. It's like, well, we can't, are we really a smart city if a majority of our population is digitally excluded? I also think during the, you know, the last 3 years, digital exclusion also had different faces, right? Because everyone had to be home at the same time. I heard about different types of digital exclusion. I had people who had, you know, a 2-parent, 4-child family that could only afford a certain bit rate of internet connection. Everyone needs to be online working and at school. They only have 3 devices. So who misses out? And even in those 3 devices, only one of them can do video conferencing at a time. So, you know, so that's willing and able, but not monetarily impacted or blocked. And then, you know, you had people like how you described, like your grandma, have people who, you know, a lot of financial barriers and connectivity strength barriers around, okay, well, I have to do video conferencing now 24/7, but I've only got a 5 gigabyte limit for my month. That's all I can afford. How am I supposed to study, or how am I supposed to live? Because this is the only engagement method I have with the world now. So it did bring it to light. And it was also great to see that, yeah, it has become, because of that terrible time, that it has become a more mainstream conversation. You know, being in that space for 8 years before joining City of Melbourne Digital Inclusion, it often felt like we were banging on the table, but, you know, there wasn't that many people listening, whereas it's much more mainstream conversation now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, like, even thinking about working from home, the digital exclusion of, you know, even in regional areas, not having that proper internet connectivity. You know, I knew schools that had to package up paper documents because they couldn't, you know, whatever, which, you know, that was a solution, but did they get the best outcome, or they had to wait longer, all those type of things. But also then, like, yeah, thinking beyond that, it's like, people's lives, can they work from home? Is it safe to be, you know, do so? Is there enough space for, like, 3 or 4 people, you know?
Probably not.
Probably not. I mean, I know, like, I'm fortunate to have an office, but, like, when I was here, like, in a smaller unit, you know, both having 2 people working in the open space trying to make phone calls, like, you just can't be as effective. But yes, then, like, yeah, people, yeah, I think there were so many things that came out of that. And, like, not that Smart Communities is going to solve all of those problems, but it's all about working towards that inclusion, quality of life, all those type of things and the uplift. And yeah.
There were some super smart people at the City of Melbourne who were really cognizant of the isolation because of the inaccess to digital tools and the internet. They worked on this program targeting older people who lived alone and who were isolated already before everything kicked off. And they worked out this program where they were creating kind of kits for them to go out, and they'd go directly out to the houses, whereas digital literacy and digital inclusion programs before that had required you to go somewhere to a hub or to a place like a library or a neighborhood house. And these were kits that were sent directly out. And, you know, they worked with a few different companies to provide mentoring services, but also because they provided the kits, the computers were set up so that if they needed help, they could get remote access and just get, so the other person could see their screen instead of trying to, you know, describe it on the phone, which we've all got a personal experience with, right?
Like trying to FaceTime, like, oh, this is, you know, this is what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were able to connect in a significant number of people in this program to the internet, to digital skills, to, you know, mitigate some of the impacts of isolation more generally. And, you know, the pandemic has kind of required creativity in how you approach some of these, you know, these different topics, including digital exclusion and social isolation. And I think that's a really great example of how when tech and kind of social inclusion lens can be applied creatively to get a great outcome.
Yeah, I totally agree. Oh, I'm just looking at the time. Oh my God. Such a good conversation. We'll have to have another one. But okay, we want to go to the future because I'm really keen to hear your thoughts. What are the future trends that people aren't talking about enough?
I have a toxic trait of always being in the future, so I think I've talked about it a little bit much too much already, probably. But yeah, I think really being human, I think thinking about the human element, thinking about like the, you know, human-centered design thinking, systems thinking, how can we always be, I guess, trialing things out, but thinking about scale, thinking about collaboration, thinking about how this could be not only an outcome for me, but an outcome for somebody else. They're the things that I'm thinking about a lot. Future trends, you know, I think it is. It's just like, where will all of our data come from? I think at the moment there's a spectrum of people who productize their data to share with other players. And I wonder if there's space that we can get to where we productize, but we share based on common good or, you know, shared collective impact to the environment or to positive social benefit. And I think that includes, you know, company sharing, government sharing, but also like people sharing. And I think that's really exciting. I think about just generally accessibility, like you should be able to access data no matter what, you know, what your education, income, language spoken, where you were born, what your internet connection is, you know, all of these, you know, your any disabilities that you have, all of these things that might impact your ability to access something or as it was designed or intended to. I hope that we can design for universal access and that it could just become, it's just always part of the conversation, and it's not something that you try and do at the end of things that you think about and centralize from the start of any activity that you seek to do.
And it's like prioritized, like it's not this.
It's a nice to have.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, where to next for Smart Communities?
You know, I'm wondering if we need a rebrand. I'm wondering.
I'm ready for it. Tell me.
No, not smart. I mean, you know, this is the Smart Communities podcast, but I'm wondering, like, is it still smart? Like, what do we?
Yes.
What do we actually mean by that? Like, we needed something. We need, like you said, we needed to carve out a space. We needed to have a shared common term. But what is the next? What is the next? I wonder what it might be. I mean, apart from that, I think I do really see increased collaboration in private, public, community, cross-sector, cross-industry. I really think that that's the future. I think there's just so much benefits that we can share if only we took a little bit more time to identify and set ourselves up in a way that makes it easy to do. And I think, you know, that's where City of Melbourne's trying to get to. How can we set ourselves up for success? What are the policies and processes that we need, you know, even in just sharing data? How do we do that better? And I think if we can increase that, I think it just becomes easier and easier to collaborate. And I do think that's where the future is, because that's, you know, it has to be.
It has to be. No, I totally agree. And like, I also agree with you, like the term smart is the best we had at the time. And, you know, it is about, but yeah, that kind of human-centered, whatever we want to call it. I mean, the problem with any kind of term is it gets buzzwordy, right? And then people think it doesn't mean anything anymore, which I don't think is necessarily the case. But yeah, it's that substance again underneath it and what that actually means and what we're trying to work towards. But I do think collaboration, and again, that's one of those words that gets bandied around a lot, but genuine collaboration can just increase our impact so significantly. It's really undervalued, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think there's just so much opportunity. It's just so, there's so much opportunity there if we can make it happen.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Tegan, it's been so great to have you on the podcast. I've loved having this conversation with you.
It went so quickly.
I know. This is wild. Now, I have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
They can connect with me on LinkedIn, on email. I'm happy. I'm always happy to share practice again, because you got to talk the talk and walk the walk. I'm always happy to share practice and literally talk to anyone. Slide into my LinkedIn DMs, email me. Phone up the City of Melbourne desktop, you know, customer service desk, and they'll go, I need to talk to Tegan, and I'll answer the call if I can.
Yes, I can confirm that they do that. Yes, Tegan will answer your call. So that was my last question, but I'm so sad now that we're finished this conversation. Well, we'll have to have another one. I hope you have a great weekend, whatever that happens to be. And, yeah, I look forward to our next conversation. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good, Zoe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tegan. Bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.